2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Dylan White is still out there and somewhere in the great white north. Is it green north at this point? I'm not quite sure. He's off again this week. He'll be back next week. He's been delivering his RoboScout articles from a remote location somewhere in the wilderness of Canada. But alongside me today is one of my good friends in this space. Somebody that I talk baseball with, and particularly fantasy baseball with, probably as much as anybody. I've drafted some teams with him. He's well known in the dynasty space. That is Dan Greenberg, a.k.a. Dan Fu. If I had a little clap machine, I'd give it for you. How's it going, Dan?
Oh, good, Jeff. Thank you for having me on. I am honored, sir.
But, yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons I had you on is you're somebody that, particularly in the dynasty area, you're very active, you know, consistently looking to improve your teams. You always have, I think, a pretty clear direction with each team that you manage. Have a lot of good squads as well. But it's something that you sort of live and breathe. It's beyond just a hobby. It's a bit of a passion for you. So, as you know, on this show, we typically kick it off at the top, stumbling a little bit there, kicked it off at the top with the rundown here, which is sort of some news and notes, injuries, how they're going to impact fantasy teams, and more or less what I want to hear from you. And what we'll talk about is what fantasy managers should do as they're dealing with some of these situations, good and bad. First one that hit the news last week, since we've last recorded, Hunter Green hits the 15-day IL with right elbow soreness. Team is saying that's precautionary. They're kind of shutting him down at this point. Ah, I don't know, Dan. I don't know if I buy it. I hear so much of this language from teams so often, and even descriptions of injuries that seem much more mild than, you know, elbow, anything elbow related. That often turn into long stints on the IL, missed time in the following season. It's been a breakout year for Hunter Green. This is a pretty big blow to any of his managers. But I think, you know, even more so, as we're winding down here over the last month or so of the fantasy season, we're kind of looking toward next year. And we want guys to finish on a high note. And I think lingering injuries, particularly with pitchers who have a history of being injured, that's a bit concerning. As a dynasty manager of Hunter Green right now, sort of what's your outlook? You're not going to get the production probably for the rest of the season, or very little if you do. Yeah. How are you handling it in the offseason, I think, is the big question.
Yeah, look, I mean, first of all, never trust anything that the teams say. We know that we can't trust them. Use your historical data. You know, you've been doing this long enough. A lot of us have been doing this long enough to see these pitching injuries come up. We kind of get a sense as to what, you know, how long they're going to be out for, what we're looking at, best case scenario, worst case scenario. Obviously, we won't know until we get official data. But right now, you can kind of assume the worst. And as far as a guy like Hunter Green, I mean, you're not doing anything with him. You're holding him. We're past the trade deadline in most leagues. There's nothing you're going to do now. This is the worst possible time of the year to suffer injury, especially if your trade deadline just passed. So there's not much you can do but hold on and pick up Matthew Boyd. I mean, obviously.
And we'll talk about that more, you know, later in the show, and Boyd in particular. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. And it's also one of those things where the only positive outcome you could have is if Tommy John does, in fact, strike and you're able to trade him at, you know, after the season ends in December before the, you know, he comes back in spring training and re-injures it and has to do something. That's probably your best outcome. And even then, it almost feels like, and I think we've all traded for pitchers that have been injured, especially high value guys. I know I had it happen with me with McClanahan last year. I'm sure there's tons of Jacob DeGrom owners a few years ago that's been the case. Your best bet is kind of hold on to those guys, hope that they bounce back, and then, you know, they either have a big year or they show enough in the first half that you're like, all right, I can get myself out from under this and get some return in this investment. you know, I think that's probably the most positive outcome you can have. But at this point, it's definitely hold season. I think that's why we'll talk in more of a general going forward to next year type of deal. Freddie Freeman missed a couple of games, jammed the middle finger on his right hand, missed Sunday as well as Monday. He's getting a CT scan. We'll see, you know, what the outcomes are here. He could be playing. It wouldn't shock me if he's back in the lineup at the end of the week. I don't think it's going to be one of those kind of injuries. We'll see.
Well, breaking news. He's hitting third tonight, Jeff. I will break that.
Oh, is he?
He is.
All right. Well, then he's actually only missing Sunday. It was reported that he was missing Monday, and he's in the lineup. So he's in the lineup. I will say this. Anything to do with hands worries me a little bit. The fact that he's back in the lineup the next night, though, that makes it a bit of a non-story. I don't think we have to dive into it. Something that is a story.
Other than the panic, Jeff. I mean, I think it's okay to acknowledge the panic. It's a state that we constantly live in as dynasty managers. We see these injury reports come along. We panic. We turn to our friends for moral support. And that's why it's so important to have those connections. In all seriousness, no, if you're a competing manager and we're getting down to crunch time here, final month of the season, we've been grinding all year, and you see the Freddie Freeman injury report come across the board, your heart just sinks. I mean, it's devastating because this was best case scenario, but it very easily could have missed a week. And the fact that, you know, he didn't is a blessing. But we've seen, look at Ketel Marte, a brutal loss for a couple of weeks here at the worst possible time of the year. So I think just turn to your moral support. It's okay.
Yeah. So there you go. Didn't even need to bring it up, but I think it's true. An injury that did happen. Austin Riley fractured hand. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. So you could pretty much not count on him for the rest of the season. You know, it's funny, coming off a historic season with the Braves, I think it was a smart decision to invest in that team, particularly that offense, just because of the amount of runs they produced last year. They run on the bases. They hit for power. There's been so many of these guys that have just dropped like flies. Acuna, obviously, Albies, now Austin Riley. Really, the biggest winner there was probably the guy you could have gotten the latest, which is Marcell Ozuna. Though I don't know how that price, you know, goes into next year. So, I mean, I don't think this impacts Riley going into next season just because of the timing of the injury. There's enough time to heal, and it might set back like training like a couple of weeks. But even then, I don't think so. Like, he's probably going to have a fairly healthy offseason. He just might struggle in the early part, but I think he might be able to get through the bumps by the time, you know, February, March hits and we're in the throes of real spring training, et cetera. But does this impact your long-term view on Riley at all?
Not really, because of his age. I mean, if he was 31, 32, we'd be having a very different conversation right now. But, you know, we're going to assume that he's young enough to heal quickly. He doesn't really have an extensive injury history. He is going to, you know, still plug into that lineup, in the middle of that lineup, which presumably will show some positive regression next year and be back to their juggernaut ways. So, no, this doesn't impact Riley at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. Another funny injury, and somebody that actually is not in the lineup tonight. Alex Bregman has missed a few games now after sleeping in an awkward position, Dan.
Like, you know, that was a reason Volkswagen?
I don't. Yeah. That's a good throwback joke. It's just such an unusual thing. I mean, you hear this from time to time, right? But it's. It's one of those funky injuries that you're like, really? Like, you know, Bregman's absolutely mashing in the second half of the season. And, you know, this is what you deal with now in the stretch run, right? I'm sure it's a legitimate injury, right? It's Alex Bregman. But at the same time, like, is he going to end up on like the 10-day IL, because he slept in an awkward position? I mean, I guess that like it's caused swelling in the back of his right elbow. So that's sort of the reason for it. I wonder if there's some other stuff going on there. That said, it did bring us Shea Whitcomb and the excitement of Shea Whitcomb getting called up. So how are you viewing Bregman next year? Because I feel like there's a lot of question marks after another really bad first half. And we don't know if he's going to be in Houston next year. I think there's a good chance that he's elsewhere. The downgrade in Park, particularly with the Crawford boxes and sort of how he gets to power in terms of really optimizing batted balls to his pull side. How concerned are you? You know, if you're a Bregman owner, it's you're sort of just riding it out at this point, hoping he's productive at the end of the season, because I think next year's a real crapshoot as to what's going to happen.
Yeah, again, I think this is a guy you kind of have to ride out for a different reason. I mean, there's not going to be a huge market for Bregman. He's been kind of on the decline. I think there's been questions and concerns about him. He's not a super popular guy, among fantasy managers anyway. So I just don't know that there's a huge market for him. I think the best case scenario for him is he gets a good landing spot where he can still maximize that pull power. Maybe he goes to Tampa Bay. We'll take him. But, you know, it's going to depend. If he comes back healthy, finishes the year all right, has a good offseason, has a good landing spot, you know, and the energy and vibe is good, he's going to get drafted and redraft probably around the same place that he did this year. And then for dynasty owners, you're just hanging on. This is the kind of guy that you don't typically want to sell. I mean, if you're not a contender, you should have sold him already. If you're a contender, you're going to hang on to him because you need him. He's probably a starter. Maybe if you have a good team, he's probably a corner infielder. Maybe he's even a depth piece, depending on the size of your league. So you just hang on to him. You ride out the next 2 years. You hope you get good production, and you got your value out of Bregman.
Yeah, and I think the other part of it, too, is like EVs haven't really dropped. The angles are still as good as they've ever been. You just had a bad first half, you know. I think if you really just take that into account and start to, though it's been a bit of a trend, I mean, he's been outstanding in the second half so far. I mean, the slash lines 280, 327, 560, you know, and like even in the first half, 256, 316, 414, he was productive. I think it's just, you know, he's easy to bag on for a lot of people, but I think it's almost at the point where, you know, maybe he's not a bad target next year. Maybe he's cheaper than he should be. But I think the landing spot will dictate a lot of that too.
Absolutely. Look, I'm buying Bregman. So that's a different conversation entirely. If I'm a contending team and that's a piece that can help me and I can plug him into a CI spot or a UT spot, I'm definitely trying to trade for him in the offseason. There's going to be that instability about leaving Houston. I'm going to play up the fact that he's leaving Houston in the Crawford boxes. We're going to play up the fact that he's older, that he had that bad first half. So this is where, you know, the savvy negotiator comes out potentially with a good deal. So I would actively be trying to acquire him if he made sense for my team. So I'm a buyer or a holder on Bregman.
I think that's perfectly accurate. Peter Fairbanks, lat strain. I don't even think we need to go into this one. I honestly feel like just this guy's throwing motion consistently bears fruit in terms of injuries. I feel like he's never consistently healthy, though. We've had him on a joint roster team this year, and he's been good when he's been home, when he's been on. And, you know, it's just you constantly deal with the health in addition to, like, him being the Rays closer, which I feel like, though it's not been awful. I mean, he's got 23 saves this year, 25 saves last year.
He pitches, he's
it's
good.
It's still like you're never going to get 40, you know? Like you're never going to blow it up and have
– But you're also not paying this, like he's going to give you 40. I mean
– Sure.
He's a tough guy. I mean, he's consistent. The Rays like him. You know, they commit to him whenever he's healthy. And this is a perfect example of – fantasy baseball and especially dynasty baseball being a cruel mistress. I just traded for him in a league where I'm down in saves holds, and then literally the next day, he's out. So, you know, this is just what you deal with and find a replacement, move on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's enough there though. The draft cost is still more than probably some other guys who are producing similar save numbers over the last couple of years. You know, I understand it. If it's somebody with major command issues. But the other thing is, it's not like Fairbanks' strikeout rate this year has been great. You know, he obviously does other things well in terms of managing contact, some of those sort of things. But he's just been okay. You know, I think there's been other guys that you probably could get around the same area, like a Clay Holmes. You know, you could have definitely gotten Robert Suarez for less. he kind of has similar numbers, honestly, to Kyle like Finnegan, which I find to be kind of interesting. But yeah, but speaking of lat strains, another guy that we have a shared team, Jared Jones, the return has been a little bumpy in the minor leagues. He's getting another rehab start, at least, is how it was worded, was at least, which tells me it could be two, or they could kind of ride this thing out as long as they possibly can and not really give him any innings over the end of the season in the majors. You know, I think that's something that's looming with some of these Pittsburgh pitchers right now, whether it's him, whether it's Paul Skeens, is do they start to play some games and kind of shut them down for periods of time over the last month or so of the season here. I love Jared Jones just overall as like from a talent perspective. He does, as a smaller right-hander that throws the way he does scare the crap out of me in terms of injuries. How are you viewing him next year? Is it still just like full on buy and hold?
Yeah.
Or is this a guy that you could potentially see yourself selling in the right package?
Maybe. It depends on the league. I mean, you know, I have him in RAS 30. I would never trade him there because you just don't trade starting pitching in that league. I mean, unless it's just an absolute, you know, can't turn down deal. Have him a couple other places I'm going to hold. This is a guy that I think you just ride it out, hope for the best. The talent's all there. You know, he's flashed it. He's shown it. I think he can be a consistent performer for you. Yes, he's got the injury concerns, but so does every pitcher. I think, you know, this year was like a really kind of nice entry for him, for us to get excited. I think he's definitely someone that if you want to sell. I mean, this is a guy that's going to command a good price, especially if he comes back and has a couple good starts at the end of the year. If you're, you know, more risk averse and you're in that philosophy of trying to sell pitching whenever possible to strengthen other areas of the team and then just recycle your pitching, great. This is a good guy to do it. He's got all the hype coming in. He needs to close strong. If he doesn't close strong, I think his market's going to be maybe a little tepid in the offseason, especially if this continues. But, you know, if there's no lingering injury concern, then this guy's going to kind of get a bump from this perceived Pittsburgh pitching machine factory. I think they're kind of the hot stuff right now when it comes to the pitching. I think that people are viewing them as you know, strong right now. They've got a lot of talent coming up. In the
minor. They have a lot of talent. Yeah.
They have a lot of talent. And so I think his market is still going to be hot as long as this injury doesn't linger or, you know, cause him to get shut down for the rest of the season and have a bunch of questions hanging over him. If that's the case, you hang on, you hope for a really strong, you know, spring training next year, then maybe you sell at the right time. Do not sell low on Jared Jones. He's got the potential to do well. You hang on to him, even if he's a fantasy SP3, or four, that's okay too. I mean, he's not going to be an ace, but he can be a very solid contributor for most leagues of most sizes.
Yeah. But I think the thing with Jones is I don't know how much his price is going to be like tamped down in Dynasty. I think redraft, I think right now, if you're looking at it from a redraft perspective, I think he probably dropped like three rounds at least from where he would have been drafted based on what his first half was and what the early numbers were. I mean, he looked like a top 50 pick, right? I don't think we're going to see that in redraft. I think the price might be more palatable at the draft table next season. I don't know how many dynasty managers that have Jones right now are willing to sell him and are going to like the return they're going to get, right? Because I do think there's that excitement factor. But I think when you look at the body, I think you look at how he throws, the type of stuff that he has, there's just not many of those guys that last like that for a long period of time. You know, Spencer Strider is probably the best example of that. And he's now had, you know, a second Tommy John surgery. You know, obviously Tim Lincecum, if we go back more years, was great, probably the best ever version of that. And a guy that had a pretty short career. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm saying sell right now, but I don't think I would be adverse to listening If I have, and I do have Jones in a couple of places. One of them is a head-to-head 12-team league where I, and he's free next year and we only have eight keepers. That's a little bit tougher. But at the same time, the fact that he's free for 2 years, somebody might get a little silly and offer me something that, you know, I might not be able to pass on. Because from year to year in that league, I think, like, it's just a matter of having guys that can contribute because it's such small windows of time. You know, it's only eight keepers plus some rookies that you maybe force up. So I kind of have, you know, a couple, and it's shallower with prospects. So I always have kind of a couple of guys that are getting forced up. Sometimes it's the best time to sell. I had Tyler Rogers when he was ripping it up a few years ago, and Freddie Peralta, and they're both free. And I packaged them together and got back Garrett Cole. I haven't looked back. I've been happy about that. So I think it's, you know, it, I'm just saying, like, be open to the idea. Another injury here.
With a guy like Jones, last thing on Jones, with a guy like that, though, I think you have to set your price is the key. And then you shop him until you get your price. So there's not necessarily a right or wrong time to do it. And you can open the market in the offseason. But like what I was saying earlier is he may not have the same perceived value at the opening of the offseason if he doesn't finish this year strong. You may get a better value if you wait till spring training. He comes out, he looks good, he's healthy. You know, he's popping high 90s and everything looks good. Sell then. I mean, that's when everybody's going to be back on that train and you will get your price. So I think the key with guys like that, where there's no need to sell, you're not in panic mode and wanting to get rid of him, set your price, wait for your price and time it right.
Yeah, I think it just depends. Like, I think sometimes the best buying and selling opportunities are like in that window after the season. Because people remember, like, they haven't necessarily dug in on numbers as hard, and they have like short memories, you know, like they might remember the end of the season, but the things that stick out are like the highlights and the fact that he's 22 years old and there's this much excitement about him. Yeah, I just don't know. I think it'll be an interesting case study once we get into the off season to see if he's moved and, you know, what the price point is. But Tyler Glass now, he's down with an elbow injury. I don't roster Tyler Glasnow anywhere just because of stuff like this. Like, I'm constantly waiting for the other shoe to drop with health. And I mean, he had been very strong this entire season. He's up to 134 innings. So it's the most innings he's ever thrown in a season, actually. I don't know, man. Like, I'm a little concerned with Glasnow. Just, I feel like this is going to happen at the end of every season or for some stretch. There's always an injury. It's good while you get it, but mm-hmm. It goes away quick and it's bad. And it's just, it just crushes you. So, yeah, I mean, Tyler Glasnow having a great season that a lot of people predicted, but this is the second IL stint in the last month or so.
You know what you're getting with him, so this isn't a mystery. The fact that we got as many innings out of him this year as we did was good. I mean, I think that was a win. I saw someone post a poll, I can't remember who it was, a couple of days ago, and I was like, yeah, you know, if this is all you got out of him this year compared to your expectations going in, are you happy, are you not? You know, I mean, this was probably the bare minimum of what you really hoped to get in order to feel like you were getting value out of Glasnow. But if you're a dynasty owner, I mean, you could have had him for years. And so you've been patiently waiting, as I've been in a couple of years. And now we finally get 130 innings or whatnot out of him. And they were great innings. Do we wish for more? Yeah, of course. Are you going to, you know, sell him in this offseason? Maybe. I mean, that's going to be a tougher sell than Jared Jones. So, you know, you've got all the injury concern in the world about Glasnow. That's been his whole thing from day one, basically. So you're going to have a more limited pool of buyers when you're trying to move a Glasnow than a Jared Jones. So I think he's another guy that you hang on to. You hope that he comes back and gives you 150 next year. I think he's capable of doing it. You know, he's in the right rotation to do that because they're not going to push him. I mean, you know, they seem happy if they get 150 innings out of a pitcher. So if you get 150 really good ace level innings from Glasnow, that is a potential league winning component.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're in a roto league, yeah, that's probably true. But a lot of people play a lot of different formats. People play head-to-head. People play points formats. And if you're, like, in a good spot in terms of your Ks to your innings and then, like, your actual ERA and whip ratios, fine. But I think in the other side of it, though, man, it's like if you're in another type of league, this is a major blow. Like, this is your ace. This is a guy that's been helping you carry your staff. And you're going into like a head-to-head playoffs, which a lot of people play. Or, you know, like a RAS 30 where you have, what, another week left in the season. Your seedings are kind of already set. And you're just waiting it out. You just want everyone to be healthy, come to head-to-head playoffs. And then, bam, you're hit with that. I know it's the fickle part of head-to-head, but some people like it. Some people play it. I play all different formats myself. I think that in a format like that, this is where consistency and innings do matter. And you usually get points for innings too. So I think it's like a different type of head where I'm way more into like the Logan Webb type in those points leagues than I am the big stuff guy that gets a ton of strikeouts and they only give you like 150 innings, you know? And that's a hope with Glasnow because he's never given anyone 150 innings in a season, right? So that's sort of one of those things that, you know, until he shows it, you can't say that it's a skill or it's an ability just yet. I think, you know, maybe, but this was probably the best bet that we thought we were going to have with Glasnow getting to this inning limit or that inning number. And, you know, maybe he still does. Of course, he'd come back in the playoffs, but he's 31 years old. I mean, he's not exactly a spring chicken. But, yeah, I think it is part of the package. It's baked into the price with Glasnow. And, you know, you got a ton of value out of it. So I think when you're talking from like a roto perspective, 100%, that's totally true.
Yeah. Well, this is
next one.
If you're going to look to sell a Glasnow. So if you're not contending next year, you're going to look to move him to a contender. And then I think to your point, you try to get someone of more consistency and you know, that's fine. I mean, maybe he is appealing to someone who's trying to build that last push, you know, 1 or 2 year contention window. If somehow, you know, you're not contending and you've got him on your team, you try to sell to those guys. Absolutely. But if you are those guys and you have the Glasnow, you're just going along for the ride. There's not going to be any other buyers. And that's the part of dynasty baseball that you have to just admit is you don't have, you know, 12, 14, 15 other buyers in a league. You realistically have the number of buyers who are looking to compete, and that a guy of that age and that industry injury history are they're going to be willing to take a risk on him. That may be 2 or 3 teams realistically. So you have to look at where you're at and look at what's actually available out there. And that a lot of times dictates your moves.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I think that, you know, with Glasnow in particular, sometimes you can play in the delusion of the offseason. Like you might have a few more teams that are interested just because like, yeah, I'm a couple pitchers away. This can get me over the hump, you know, Dodgers, you know, if I get 130 to 150 innings like that, it's going to, you know, do this to my SGP and my numbers and Ks, et cetera. I think you could sometimes play on that in the offseason too, especially like right in the right pockets. Like, I think sometimes like that early January window, if you can do trading in your league at that point, that's a great window to trade in. Especially when guys are doing some, you know, once the projections are out and they start like throwing around the projection numbers and the value and all those draft sheets, I'm sure Glasnow is going to be rated super high. You're going to be able to get some people to buy in for sure. Good news here, Dan, good news. Jacob Wilson on his way back, I would imagine once he's ready to go in a couple of weeks or a couple of games, maybe this weekend, he's going to slide right into that shortstop spot. There's enough days now that I think just because it was one active day, he's not going to graduate probably more likely than not. He's actually a really good pickup if you're looking for somebody that can kind of put you over the edge. In points leagues, can put you over the edge in batting average. Yeah, I think he's interesting. I don't think there's going to be a ton of power, probably not a lot of steals, but he runs enough and he hits enough that you might get some counting stats and that sort of thing. Runs, maybe some RBIs as well. And yeah, I mean, you know, it's the Athletics lineup, so we'll see where he hits. Yeah. But I think just from a batting average perspective, that's kind of interesting. I don't love him long term. It's not somebody I'm going to go out and get just because the batting average doesn't come with big steal numbers. I don't think it's going to come with big power unless there's a alteration in the swing path or the swing. What's your take on Wilson's kind of a one category guy, maybe a two category guy, if you know he's at the top of the lineup and scores some runs?
Yeah, I mostly am a buyer in points and head-to-head leagues. He is far less interesting to me in a roto league for the reasons that you described. I agree with that. I am cautiously optimistic on A's players right now. You know, A, they're kind of coming up. They have a nice young nucleus. Some of those guys, you know, actually can hit. They seem to have a bit of a energy or a vibe to them right now. They're moving into a different park that is going to be better to hit in than Oakland. I don't think it's going to be the bandbox that some people are hoping for, but it's going to be an improvement. So, you know, adding all those things up together, I think there's something happening in Oakland that I'm interested in. You know, I was a big buyer on Brent Rooker this year, and I think he only gets better next year. So Wilson, if he plugs into the one or two hole in that lineup and he's on base a lot, he is an OBP machine. You know, he's going to get his hits. He's going to score some runs. He's not going to knock in much. He's not going to have a lot of power. He's probably not going to steal too many bases. So he's in that Arise mold, who's super valuable in a points league. I mean, that guy goes up several tiers in a points league. So I think this is what you're looking at with Wilson. I'd certainly buy in that scenario, but if I'm in a roto league, I don't think I'm buying. If he happens to be, you know, part of a deal, or I get a really good deal on him, which I just don't think is going to happen. I mean, I don't know that, you know, the average roto player is going to see the diminishment in value for him in that setting. So I just don't know that buying him in a roto league is going to work out for you.
All right. Next one we'll talk about here. Connor Norby promoted up to the Marlins. So the part of the return in the Trevor Rogers trade. I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting going into next season. I think there's going to be opportunity there. He's got a little bit more impact and power than some of the other guys that the Marlins have available at second base. There's quite a few of them. A little bit more strikeouts maybe too. But you know, he's hit pretty much at every single level outside of a small sample in the majors. You know, went 1-for-4 tonight with a run scored. Yeah, I think this is a guy that might be kind of a sleeper going into next year in terms of a guy that could get opportunities. We know he can hit. We know he's major league ready. Struck out a little bit more this year, I think, just kind of searching for the power. But there's some steals. There's some power. Not a ton, but enough to kind of round out the profile enough that he could be like a valuable guy as a utility, a bench piece, you know, a potential middle infielder if you need that. I think, you know, Norby's a guy that I probably might be on a little bit next year, but it's going to depend on what the price is. I imagine it's going to be fairly cheap and redraft, and the same thing in Dynasty. Now that he's not part of like that Orioles machine, and it's Miami and everyone hates that park for good reason. You know, he might get downgraded a little bit. What do you think?
I don't have any shares. I can't say I'm the biggest Norby guy. I don't dislike him. Just never kind of caught on with Norby. So with a guy like that, I think you take the shot if the price is right. If he's got playing time, you take the shot. I'm just not going to overpay on a guy like Norby. So if he's a throw-in in a deal, he's a second piece or a third piece in a deal, you take your shot on him, see if he holds down the job and actually produces. Not the best park, not the best lineup, you know, a million reasons why we don't necessarily get excited about him. If you've got him, hallelujah. I mean, he's finally going to play. This is good. This is what you've been waiting for several years now, since, you know, James Anderson made him a thing. And, you know, now – no, sorry, Jeff. That's what I remember. So
he was a thing at East Carolina, dude. This is Baseball America, buddy. Like we cover these players as amateurs. We knew who Connor Norby was when he went as a second round pick.
I understand. I'm speaking from personal.
This wasn't like Logan Evans. It wasn't like some long off find.
Well, shout out to James. Love you, man. But no,
shout out to James.
Point is, if you've had him all this time, you are very happy, finally. You probably dropped him. You maybe picked him up again, maybe even twice. And if you don't have him anymore, I wouldn't lose sleep over it. If you want to go take a shot at acquiring him back, go take a shot. I mean, you might be able to get him for a pretty modest price. Maybe you get him for an FYPD pick. If you're sitting in the back of the first round of an FYPD, right? Pick 15, 16, something like that, or early second round, and you want to throw a pick out there to try to reacquire him, great. That's the kind of deal that I want to make. I want to trade my fourth or fifth best prospect, maybe, you know, for him if you're really into him, but not, I'm not paying more than that.
Yeah, I'll say one of the things that I like about Norby, one of the reasons I think this guy is potentially a sleeper, and he's not somebody I don't think anyone's going to overpay for. And a majority, I would say, of dynasty leagues where like more than 150 prospects are rostered, he's probably on a roster somewhere. He pulls the ball in the air. Like, I think that's one of those things that is a little bit underrated when we're looking at prospects. Guys that consistently pull the ball in the air maybe get to a little bit more power than they probably should. He's not the biggest guy, but like I said, you know, if there's 15 homers here and 14 steals, 13 steals, somewhere in that range, and like a 260 average, that's a pretty valuable player in a lot of leagues. So I just think like he could be a guy that could be a lot cheaper this offseason than he was when he was in the Baltimore machine. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of different interesting targets and sort of archetypes that you tend to go after. So we'll be right back after this.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform of over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging. You can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. I think we're going to have an opening coming open. When it comes open, I'm going to use Indeed. Why? Because Indeed makes my job easy. When I'm hiring, it puts it all in one place. It organizes it. It does the thinking for me to where I can just connect with quality candidates and do the process that we need to do to hire. That's what Indeed does. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true from even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/baseball.
All right, and we're back here with Dan Greenberg. We're talking fantasy baseball. Dan is one of the managers that I respect most, that I have had the honor of playing with in leagues over the years, and just, you know, becoming friends and chatting about baseball, and particularly fantasy baseball. But you kind of gave me a few different types of players that you'd sort of target this, I think, this offseason, or just sort of in general. And we'll go through each archetype. The first one that you gave me was older guys that other teams dump for younger guys, but can help you make a push this year or next. And a couple of names that you called out were Matt Boyd and our boy Nick Martinez.
Your favorite. Your favorite. We will have Nick Martinez lore for as long as I know you.
I traded Kobe Mayo for Nick Martinez 2 years ago. So
you didn't have to admit that. I mean, I was baiting you.
No, I'm totally fine. I'm an open book, dude. I'm honest here.
Yeah. So this was you asked over the last couple of weeks, you know, who were some names that I'm picking up in dynasty leagues and why. And so, you know, dynasty leagues are funny because everybody kind of has a different, you know, philosophy. Everybody's in a different spot at various points in the year. And, you know, so people are looking for totally different things. So in a couple of leagues where I had some pitching injuries, I've got a Glasnow issue. Matt Boyd was available in Fab in some of these leagues. So I picked him up. It was right after he had that good start. I think people either, you know, were some of the bottom of the league maybe checked out. Guys at the top of the league didn't have a roster spot for him. So I had an injury need. And this is a guy who obviously in the past has performed when he's healthy. He's a solid enough pitcher. And if he just goes on a little run here, you know, this is why I'm not afraid to roster a Tyler Glasnow, is because if I get 130 or 40 innings out of him and I have faith in my skills and I'm savvy enough and I'm on the grind and I can pick up a Matt Boyd to give me, you know, 30 good innings to close out the year, there's my 160 innings that I wanted out of Glasnow. I know, you know, it's not going to be quite as good here at the end, but, you know, that's enough. And so these are the kind of guys, or Nick Martinez a couple of weeks ago, when he has that first good start, if you've got a roster spot that you can churn, which you always should try to have in a dynasty league, and you pick him up and you get a few good starts out of him, I mean, that really can make the difference at the end of the year. So these are the kind of guys I'm looking at that most people just aren't interested in. The bottom half of the league doesn't care. You know, they're over age 30 and they've got injury history, not interested, like automatically. Top of the league, you know, a lot of times they just – they're not looking for these kind of guys. So if that falls in the sweet spot for you, you jump on them immediately. You hope for the best. And then this is, you know, a guy that can help you next year. I mean, Boyd could legitimately be a good starting piece for you next year if he can stay healthy. So I thought that was like a great ad here in first week of August.
Yeah, I think just healthy and effective. He hasn't been great, obviously, since like 2021. But it could be interesting. And I think you see with like the Guardians have done with a guy like Ben Lively, you know, where if like you throw enough strikes, you have something interesting, you know, they can kind of accentuate that. And we'll see. It's definitely a blast in the past kind of name that is sort of interesting. And I think, you know, Martinez is another one where like I've been happy to have him over the last couple of years because he's been effective in like multiple roles. So you can kind of get a little bit of each, then got moved obviously to Cincinnati, maybe less strikeouts. It's not a ton of swing and miss, but he throws a ton of strikes, which I think for, you know, my team, I'm always looking for guys that can keep the ratios low. He's done a good job of that. And you know, when he started this year, he's been pretty good. And I think that's been sort of exciting to see over the last couple of weeks in the closing part of the season. If you do roster him in a deeper dynasty, this is a 30 team dynasty league where I've had Nick Martinez for a couple of years. I mean, obviously much better as a reliever, but still as a starter, he's been productive of late outside, I think, the last start. So yeah, those are sort of interesting names. And I think a good reminder that, you know, if you're in a push, sometimes gambling on guys like this isn't so bad. Maybe they figure something out, like a Boyd finds health, or he's throwing, I have to dig into the numbers more, he's throwing a slider more, whatever it might be, different fastball shape, you know, added another pitch that you didn't see the last time he was here. And these guys kind of find the second wave. It's not impossible for a pitcher to sort of have a completely different career arc from age 30, 31 to 35, you know. Charlie Morton, certainly an example of a guy like that. Couple of other names here, some more prospect related names, but injured or poorly performing guys who people forget about and then drop, as you say, with the hotness. So quickly get released from teams. Cade Cavalli is one. Victor Scott's another. Carlos Jorge is another. Gino Groover is another. So tell me what you like about each of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, Cavalli, you know, he's a guy that had all the promise in the world a couple of years ago. I know you were big on him. Nate Handy was big on him. He's got a lot of skills. I mean, obviously, this guy was a top draft pick. He's got all, you know, all the talent in the world if he recovers from his arm surgery. So, you know, this is a guy that's been like hanging around on waiver wires in a bunch of leagues all year and finally snapped him up in a couple spots. So you could get innings out of him this year. I mean, I think he's going to come back and maybe make a couple of starts, but you're really looking for next year for him. So this is an example of, you know, even though I'm, you know, most of my teams are competing right now, I'm always happy to grab a guy that I think is going to work for me next year. So he was just like a prime example of someone I fabbed and dropped, you know, whoever, a lower end prospect for. And I'm really more looking for next year for Cavalli. And I think he could be a legit guy. And you see what the Nationals are doing with their pitching prospects nowadays. That's much improved again. So I'm going to put a little bit of faith in the system and hope that Cavalli can give me some production next year. Victor Scott, I was ready to take an L on. I'll be honest with you. I'm the guy who dropped him in the league, but I just picked him up again. So he was coming into the year. Obviously, he was super hyped. I think I took him in an FYPD where all unowned prospects were available and prospects weren't able to be picked up all off season because it closes at the end of the year. This is in the Chris Clegg dynasty dugout dynasty league. So I grabbed him with like the seventh or eighth pick in the FYPD this last off season and then got nothing from him and was sad. And, you know, then he comes back and he kind of shows a little bit of life. He pops a home run in the big leagues. It's like, that was enough for me to say, you know, I don't want the regret. So did I drop someone I wanted to drop? No. Am I willing to take that risk and see it through the off season and see what happens in spring training next year for the, you know, maybe the outside shot at him stealing 50, 60 bases? Yes. And if that doesn't happen and the bat doesn't come around and I drop him next year or I offload him in an early fab next year, that's fine. He was just a guy that because he was available for a couple of weeks in that league and I started having like a little bit of panic and regret, I picked him back up again. And it's just an example of anyone can get dropped. I mean, you would have never thought of dropping that guy, you know, 3-4 months ago. And right now he could be sitting out on your waiver wire. Carlos Jorge, same kind of thing, post-hype sleeper. I mean, this guy had a ton of buzz, you know, a couple of years ago, performed well, had good numbers, has some injury issues, has come back, not great, but, you know, better in the last month or so. So this is an example of a guy who has, you know, the prospect pedigree, has shown that he, you know, has performed. He's been a top 100 prospect. So when a guy like that is available on your waiver wire and you have that spot to churn, I don't mind again picking him up, seeing him through the offseason, you know, see what he can do. And if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, he's going to get churned. So I just liked the pedigree there. You know, same thing with Groover. He doesn't have the minor league production, but he came in with pretty decent FYPD pedigree. And I'll give a shout out to the Welsh for this one. He was a big Geno Groover guy all through FYPD season. And then he gets hurt and doesn't play all season. So this is a guy that probably got drafted in the third or fourth round of most FYPDs, probably got dropped within the first, you know, month or two or three of the season and probably has sat on your waiver wire for the last several months. So now that he's back, he's actually, you know, performed all right since he's been back. So this is a guy that you would have had to pay for before, and now you can get for free as a waiver wire addition. Like, just go for it. Take a shot. I like taking a shot on the pedigree guys. We have seen consistently over the last few years, it takes time for a lot of these guys to work out. Not everyone just hits the ground running and is consistent and great and like just plowing their way through the system. Sometimes you have to, you know, just give people time to marinate. And if you like the underlying skills or you like that pedigree, you like that profile, take a shot and hang on to them for a little bit of time. And, you know, cut bait when it's time to cut bait.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, I don't necessarily like all those guys a ton. Like, for me, I think the big issue with Jorge is like the swing decisions and the contact just bottomed out. 35.5% miss rate, 27.4% zone miss rate. He's a higher chase guy, which you can be if you make a ton of contact. And the EVs are pretty below average. Like it's a 100.9 mile per hour, 90th percentile. He's not super projectable. You know, the numbers on contacts, like a 315 ex Wobakon. So I think like he could recover a little bit, but he's really going to maybe have to go back to kind of who he was identity wise. Just in terms of like more of a contact guy, which he is not at all right now. And that's a little concerning. The Scott stuff to me is funny because I think if you look at a lot of the underlying numbers, it just seems like he's gotten, and some of this is going to happen when you don't hit the ball particularly hard. But I feel like some of it is like bad luck on balls in play. Like he's got a 240 something BABIP this year in AAA. And I think that's driving a lot of it. Cause like you look under the hood, it's still really good swing decisions. The contact is good. You know, the ball flight and like bat speed type of stuff isn't great. Like I said, he doesn't hit the ball really hard, but he's so fast that I think just him being able to kind of spread it around, there's maybe better outcomes to come there a little bit. I think if he gets just a touch stronger, probably leans into going oppo a little bit more, especially as a left-handed hitter. Because, you know, pull side ground balls, I don't care how fast you are, more often than not are going to be outs. So I think that's probably the thing for him to overcome that he's kind of dealing with somewhat this season, why it's had such bad results, you know. Rivers not a bad one.
You have to wait for the Cardinals to trade him as well, obviously. So like that was my fatal error was just not waiting for the Cardinals to trade him so he can get good.
Now that Dylan Carlson's gone, like they've cleaned up some space for him, you know. He might be in Cardinals jail for a couple more years. I don't know. We'll have to see. Yeah, but I don't think Groover is a bad one. He's obviously dealt with injuries. He's only played 38 games this year. So, you know, he's one that could probably like slide under the radar a little bit too. The thing with him is he had a really concerning drop in terms of exit velocity and power production from college to the professionals. So I think like you look at the EV and it was above average in college. It's like 100 miles an hour. He actually has a lower 90th percentile than Victor Scott. Another guy with really good skills, really good contact skills, 12% in zone miss rate, which is excellent. 25.2% chase rate, which is also pretty good. You know, like it's just, he doesn't hit the ball that hard that frequently. The angles aren't bad, but they're not great. I think a lot of it with him is skill, and there still needs to be like a jump in power. But you know, it's not unheard of for a guy like that to make that sort of jump. So I think that's an interesting one as well, as I think Victor Scott is. I'm a little bit less, you know, on Jorge. And Cade Cavalli, I'm a sucker for Cade Cavalli. I think he's good. I think he's going to be a good starter as long as health finds him. He had Tommy John surgery in March of last year. So it's been a little bit longer of a road to recovery. I think you were hoping he was back in Rochester, maybe even making some starts in the big leagues by like late July, early August, but time frames are different for everybody. He has been throwing. I know that he did throw in a complex league game back in maybe early July or late June. I'd have to double check on that, but I think got kind of shut down with some soreness, and he's been throwing again, so probably not going to get anything this season, unfortunately. Even if it was like three starts in September, that would be great. But I don't think we're going to see that. It's probably all systems go going into the next season. Someone to monitor, and maybe the fact that he doesn't come back, you know, further depresses the price, and he's even an even better buy this offseason. I think probably an afterthought in a lot of redraft leagues, at least prior to spring training, because there's a chance this guy, as you were saying about Jared Jones, comes out in spring training, is sitting 96 miles an hour, showing that hard cutter and that really hard curveball and kind of mixing up eye levels and just nasty stuff. I mean, I think he was on his way to being a very good rookie starter prior to that injury. Was really good when I saw him in spring training that year. All right, let's move on to sort of the last one here. Guys with a current perception of playing time issues. DJ Hers, you called out Matt Wallner, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, because you wrote Waller. I just realized that. Ty France, Lucas Erceg. I love me some Lucas Erceg in a couple of innings the other day. And then Miguel Andujar.
Yes, let's
go. He will never die. Miguel Andujar will live. He'll be playing until he's 40 and just teasing you. But these are guys you're going after, so talk to me why.
Well, you know, I think these are guys that are currently performing decently. They can help you. So I picked these guys up in leagues where I'm competing that I suffered from injuries, similar to in like that Matt Boyd kind of framework. So, you know, hers is inconsistent. So when I say kind of perception problems, you know, he's been up and down. He's a rookie pitcher. He's going to have those issues. He's been really great. He's been really bad. He's not a guy that's going to attract a lot of attention because you're going to look at the numbers on the stat sheet and you're going to say, well, that sucks. But, you know, then you take a look at him and if he puts it together, the guy has a fairly high ceiling. I mean, he's got warts, obviously, but he can perform. He's got the K ability, which is great. And he's sitting out there and he's been sitting out there forever. It's like a guy, he's one of those guys that just kind of teases me every Fab week. I'm looking at him. And then finally I pick him up. You know, and guys like Wallner and Ty France and Andujar, I mean, these guys have starting jobs right now. You know, with Wallner, you have some platoon issues, but that's fine. If you're in a daily league, no problem. If you've got Friday swaps, no problem. And he's producing. Yeah. So if you can play matchups with a guy like that, you play Ty France at home and, you know, you're playing Andujar at home. So this is where the beauty of the daily league. If I can grab a couple of these guys as bench players and I can use them strategically to maximize their output where they do best, then that could be that little nudge I need in the last month of the season. And that could get me over the top, and no one cares anymore about, you know, Ty France, and no one cares about Miguel Andujar. But these guys are good in a limited space. You can't expect the world from them, but they can help you with what they do well. So these are, you know, Erceg, I'm surprised wasn't picked up more widespread, you know, when he got traded. I think there was enough buzz there that he could potentially take that job. All the skills are there. You know, it's a guy that you guys have been talking about for a long time, but maybe the more casual player that name just, you know, doesn't quite register yet. And so that's where you got to always be on the grind, because if you can pick up a guy like that and he closes out the year with 6 or 7 saves, and then next year, you know, can save 20 or 30, huge. And you got him for free. So this is why you never quit on a dynasty league. You're always actively mining players, and you grab a guy like that, and a couple people like that can really turn your team around or put you over that last little hump that you needed to get over. So I was really pleased with all these pickups recently.
Yeah, and he's got team control going forward, and should be pretty cheap, and he's 29, so you're not like that concerned about him getting to free agency or getting too expensive. So yeah, I think Erceg's a really good one. I know that we drafted in our DC because I've been a fan for a while. You know, hers is really interesting because like the underlying metrics in some ways were better in the first half where he was like a 5 ERA pitcher, but had a 349 xFIP, 399 FIP. Second half, he's a guy who's been a 304 ERA guy with, and I'll get into what I think is going on here. But 447, 407 in terms of FIP, xFIP in the second half. So when he's projected to be good, he's bad. But when he's projected to be bad, he's good. Ks have gone down a little bit. They are there. The walks have gone up a little bit. But he's been avoiding contact overall, and he's been avoiding good contact, and he's had a lot of good defensive plays behind him. He had some bad luck, I think, in terms of defensive plays behind him, you know, early in the season, just looking at his like infield hit rate, it was like 3 times as high in a similar amount of innings. But in the second half, batting average against 205 versus a 271. So I'd have to dig in a little bit more to see if there's something specific in terms of where he's setting up. How he's sequencing differently, maybe a little bit in terms of, you know, what the pitch usage has been over the second half. But he's been actually like a really productive starter that I'm sure if you're looking at, you know, who has the highest Fantrax score over the last 14 days or 30 days in your waiver wire, he's a guy that might pop up that might be available. I think that's a really good call out there as well. But all right, Dan, gone just about a full hour. We've talked all types of things, fantasy baseball, a lot of strategy, digging in with different perspectives from both sides. Dan, I want to thank you again for joining me. It's been Dan Greenberg, fantasy baseball player extraordinaire, one of my good friends. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. And Dylan will be back next week, so I'll say cheers for him now. Cheers.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling. Come on, move! You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.